It is your AEW Dynamite review here for Wednesday, February 10, 2021. I am the Solemn Monster, and that was probably the best main event in the history of Dynamite. If it wasn't the best, it's probably head-to-head, neck-and-neck with the parking lot brawl, Santana and Ortiz against Best Friends. Definitely one of the best main events in the history of this show. A wild Falls Count Anywhere main event. With Kenta making his in-ring AEW debut, teaming with Kenny Omega to take on Jon Moxley and Lance Archer. This was a taped show tonight. It's pretty obvious when they're taped and they're not live. Just the way certain things are edited. They didn't even show the audience tonight. If you'll notice, they didn't show the fans or anything like that. And for the most part, tonight's show is kind of ho-hum. I mean, it kind of moved along some of the stories. But then the main event came out of nowhere like a shotgun blast. That was a lot of fun. I thought that main event was high energy, all action from start to finish. And I thought Lance Archer looked like a beast. Lance Archer looking like the monster and the murderer that we know he could be. I'm just happy he's finally being featured and they finally found something for him to do. After all those months of him not doing anything, it's like they didn't know what to do with the guy. Now he has settled into, at least for now, he has settled into the role that suits him well. He is the unstoppable monster who actually did get stopped at the end of the main event, but it took a whole bunch of people to do it. I am the Solemn Monster. I hope you guys are having a great Wednesday night. We did open with the TNT title on the line. It was Darby Allin defending the championship in the opener tonight, taking on Joey Janela. These two are no strangers to each other. They have competed before against each other on the independent scene. Excalibur mentioned that tonight. And so they went out there. I figured this was just a warm body for Darby Allin to go out there and beat. And that's what Janela was. But I thought this match was actually very good. I thought this was a very good way to open the show tonight. Darby, like a cannon going through the middle and the bottom ropes. I love it. I love it. As much as I am sick to death of all the dives, what have I said? Two people in particular, actually three. So I'm kind of expanding my roster of people who I will not complain when they do dives, because at least when they do it, it actually looks devastating. Rey Fénix is one. Darby Allin is the other. And Jungle Boy, I think it works for him too. But that's it. That's my cutoff. As far as the men go, that's my cutoff for the dives. But Darby shot himself out like a cannon, knocked Janela backwards into the barricade. Fujiwara armbar by Darby Allin. Janela gets to the bottom rope. Coffin drop attempt off the ropes. Janela catches him in midair with a German suplex. That was cool. There was a Janela pile driver spot for a near fall. We had an avalanche code red by Darby. Only gets two. Coffin drop follows that. Halfway across the ring, Darby hits this coffin, because he's so tiny. He's not a big guy, so he can fly halfway, three quarters sometimes across the ring. Darby hits the coffin drop. It connects. He gets the win. I enjoyed it. I don't need to see Joey Janela challenging for any more championships for the time being. But for tonight, here's what I liked about it. First of all, the match was good, but here's what I liked about it. Darby Allin is the TNT champion, right? That's a TV title, basically. They don't call it that, but that's basically what it is. It's kind of like their version, in a way, of the TV title. And so Darby Allin should be defending his title more often on TNT. I'm not saying he has to defend it every single week. That's what Cody was doing when he had the championship. But we need to see more of this. We need to see more of Darby defending his title on TV. So let's get some more defenses. Let him rack up some more wins. Because I feel like before this week, when was the last time we actually saw him in a one-on-one match defending the title on Dynamite? I feel like it's been a while. No involvement by Team Taz, and I'm thinking to myself, well, that's kind of strange. I mean, given their threat from last week, that's a little weird. Let's see what happens later on in the show, and sure enough, we'll come back to this. MJF and Sammy Guevara. So we had a pretty major development on the show tonight in terms of the Inner Circle storyline. Last week, if you remember, we had the image of MJF in the locker room asking everybody to leave. He wanted to talk to the remaining members of the Inner Circle when Sammy left and Jericho, I think, went to go after him. So now, in comes Sammy this week, and Sammy wants everybody else to leave. It's just going to be Sammy, MJF. MJF tells Wardlow, you too, leave. Go to the back, or go get a cup of coffee, do whatever the fuck you want, but you can't be here. So we have the two of them face to face, and Sammy says, look, I know what you're trying to do. And MJF is playing coy. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what your problem is. And Sammy says, I know exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to take over the group. You're trying to take over the inner circle. And MJF throws it back at him and says, you know, you were jealous from day one because when I came in, you were no longer Chris Jericho's belle of the ball, right? You and Jericho had a tag team, and now that tag team is dead. You were the apple of his eye. When I came in, that changed. That wasn't the case anymore. So maybe it's you who doesn't like Jericho. Maybe it's you who wants to take over the inner circle. And Sammy very sarcastically says, oh, you got me all figured out. You caught me. You're right. I want to take over the inner circle. MJF had put his phone down and he was recording audio. And Sammy sees this and he goes, what are you doing? You're recording me? And he grabs his cell phone, he throws it against the wall, and he punches him in the gut. Sucker punch to the gut, down goes MJF. Here's my issue with this segment, and I'm sure a lot of other people are going to make the same observation. Why would Sammy care about MJF recording this audio on his phone when you have a cameraman shooting video of the entire segment? Now, it's a TV show. If it were a case where in the past they hadn't acknowledged the presence of the cameraman, which they do every single week, in fact, some of these guys will physically grab a cameraman and bring the cameraman with them because they want them to film whatever it may be. So they've openly acknowledged that there's a camera guy there who's recording this and shooting this every single week. So just logically, this was so stupid. This whole segment, or at least, you know, what they tried to do there at the end was dumb. Because all Jericho has to do is just watch the footage back to see for himself. So I thought that was pretty stupid, actually. But this was part of a developing story that would pay off with something later on in the night. We had Cody Rhodes and Lee Johnson teaming up to take on Peter Avalon and the former NXT star, and I do use that word loosely. He made a few appearances on NXT a few years ago, wasn't really a star. Cesar Bonanni, who has been making appearances on AEW Dark. So before the match started, Cody went over to Arn Anderson's son. They acknowledged that this person Cody went up to in the front row was Arn Anderson's son, Brock. Named his son Brock. Brock Anderson. And he goes over and he shakes his hand, and I'm just thinking to myself, spitting image of his father, only he has actual hair on his head. But the other thing he has in common with his father is the fact that you could take one look at this kid, and I'm assuming he's in his early 20s, maybe mid-20s. They said he just graduated from Northwestern or some university. But you look at him, and if they hadn't mentioned that he had just graduated from college, although I guess technically you can graduate from college at any age, but if he's Arn Anderson's son, he's got to be early 20s. You would look at him, if you didn't know any better, he could be in his 40s. He could be in his 30s, his 40s, just like his dad. If you go look at Arn Anderson when he was that age, Arn Anderson could pass as a 40-year-old. I feel like Arn Anderson came out of the womb as a 40-year-old. And so his son is following now in his father's footsteps. He looks very wise for his age. Tony Schiavone said that now that he's graduated, he's trying to make his way in the wrestling world. So apparently we're going to have another Brock. We're going to have another Anderson coming into the wrestling business. So Cody made a hot tag to Johnson coming out of the commercial break. Lee Johnson landed very impressive looking corkscrew plancha out of the ring onto Bonanni. Hit a fisherman's neck breaker on Avalon, made a cover. Bonanni broke it up. Cody and Bonanni, they brawl out of the ring, and Johnson rolls up Avalon for the win. Not very impressive when you need to roll up Peter Avalon for the win instead of getting a dominant, decisive victory. But this was a big deal to Mr. Johnson because this here tonight was his very first victory in AEW. Lee Johnson, who has, I don't believe, ever had a match on Dynamite before. If he did, it was maybe a one-off at some point, but he's an AEW Dark regular for the better part of a year. And he mentioned here that he had a 0-29 record coming into this show tonight. Not one single victory all year long. And they tried to, you know, make it like this was some big deal. Tony Schiavone rushed over to interview him on stage. He was flanked by the entire Nightmare family. Somebody in one of the super chats I'm going to get to here in a second made a great comment. They said, boy, this Nightmare family is turning into like the 1998 version of the NWO. It just keeps expanding. Now they've got Lee Johnson. They've got this other guy who was on TV a few weeks ago looking like a caveman, Nick Camerato. The Nightmare family is expanding and growing by leaps and bounds with a bunch of people who I don't even know who the fuck they are. It really is turning into like the NWO from 98. They need to, you know, slow their roll there a little bit. This family is getting a little too big. But Tony Schiavone is there to interview him. And, you know, clearly he was, and maybe he was supposed to be like this, but he was, you know, nervous. And he said that he was trained by Cody and Dustin, and the Rhodes family is his family. This wasn't very good. The promo, the match itself was nothing. I mean, his nice little flurry of offense is really the only memorable part there at the end. The match was nothing. But the story was, this kid just got his first big win. The promo, not very good. No personality. But again, he's not used to cutting promos on Dynamite. And he's trying to sell the shock, I guess, of having his first win come here on TNT tonight. So it might have been that way by design, but I didn't get the sense there was a whole lot of personality being shown there. In time, I'm sure that will come. If he's going to be featured, then he'll have plenty of time to up his promo game. Tony Khan tweeted after this segment, he said, in April, most of the roster could not travel and we needed local talent for Dynamite. Cody Rhodes recommended his pupil. Lee came and worked hard. I was blown away, and I kept booking him. With Cody's guidance, Lee got his first win tonight. Congrats, Lee. Now it is official. And he included the image that Lee Johnson is all elite. So I take that to mean that he has officially signed a contract now with AEW, and we'll be seeing even more of him in the future. See, Cody trying to put his fellow family members over. If I were coming into AEW, or I thought, hey, I want to get a shot in AEW, I would go to the Nightmare Factory. I would join the Nightmare family. I'd put that little jacket on with the logo on it. Maybe I'd get a matching neck tattoo because that's your way in. Apparently, you get into this Nightmare family and you're in with Cody and Dustin. You got it made. Let that be a lesson to anybody hoping to get their big break in AEW. We had the Bastard Pack against Ryan Nemeth, Baby Dolph. I'm calling him Baby Dolph because if he didn't want people thinking that he looks and sounds and acts like Dolph Ziggler, then he wouldn't come out looking and dressing and acting exactly like him. So he's Baby Dolph. Pac made short work of him, as he should have. Pac hits the Black Arrow to the back. Nemeth is laying on his stomach, hits the Black Arrow, immediately transitions into the Brutalizer. Gets the immediate tap out. I love the aerial replay of the Black Arrow. First of all, the Black Arrow is easily one of the best finishes in wrestling. I love the Black Arrow. I was praising it back when it was still the Red Arrow. And I love the fact that they protect it. That is a move that should be protected. I don't want to see anybody kicking out of that move. That move has to be held in a different category. And I love the replay of it. The way he lands it, sticks the landing. Beautiful. Beautiful. So an easy win for Pac. We had Hangman Page. Actually, before I get to Hangman Page, look at Big Show. Big Show saying no? No, you don't like Hangman Page? Let me catch up with some of the super chats. How many Nias have we had so far? I saw one Nia Jax. Did I miss more? Nia and her whole... You may see her pop up a few more times before this night is over. But I want to go back here. Hashway, thank you for the 10th spot. Hashway was number one tonight on the Super Chat column. Patrice. This is why I wanted to mention it, because Patrice is the one who made the comment about the Nightmare family becoming very much like the 1998 NWO. And Ryan spies every day that goes by without Layla Hirsch joining Team Taz is a disappointing day. You know what? I've thought that before because somebody else made that comment weeks ago. She would be a good fit. I think she would be a good fit. They don't have any females in the group. She seems, she's like the shooter of the women's division. I think she would be a good fit in Team Taz. Team Taz is ever looking for some female representation. She's a good choice. I agree. Hangman Page was being interviewed by Dasha about a possible tag team with Matt Hardy. Hardy showed up, and he wanted to invite him out to the bar. That's Hangman's favorite place. See, Matt Hardy is not a stupid person. So later in the show, they followed up on, and there was some comedy here. There was a lighthearted moment as that segment broke up, and Hangman agreed to go to the bar with him, and as he's walking away, he runs into the Dark Order. He runs into John Silver, who's acting. It's like if you were in a relationship with somebody and then you awkwardly ran into them on the street and you had to make small talk. That's what this was. There was very awkward interaction here. But later on, we flash forward to the bar, and clearly, Hangman Page was looking like Tom Brady. Saw that video earlier of Tom Brady. Tom Brady had the sea legs. He had to have somebody hold him up. But I guess when you win your, seventh Super Bowl, you can pretty much drink yourself into a stupor, right? He's entitled. So Hangman was having a Tom Brady moment here. And they went to go do shots. And Matt Hardy, I love this. I actually laughed out loud at this because this is a trick that I have employed in the past when I've gone out to bars with friends. There are occasions where you're out with people, it's someone's birthday or it's an anniversary or some kind of whatever, some celebratory occasion. And I have that one friend who just loves buying shots for everybody. Now, look, I think it's very nice to do that. You want to buy a beer? I'll have a beer. But then you have people who have to buy shots. And I feel like I finally reached that age where I'm done with the whole shots thing. I just can't. If I even sniff Patron, I want to vomit. But they get the shots. And so I've done this a couple of times. Sometimes you can't because if you're standing in the middle of a crowd of people, then you're stuck. But I have been in situations where even in a crowded bar, if I'm up against the wall or, I'm up against like the brick wall or something in the back, and everybody is lifting up their shots. Everybody's saluting. All right, we're going to down the shot. I have thrown it over my shoulder before. And I check first to make sure I'm not throwing it on anybody. But, you kind of, all right, you throw it behind you. Then you sell it like, oh, man, oh, boy, that went down rough. Because, fuck, how many shots can you have? Everybody knows their limit. These fuckers keep buying shots. So when Matt Hardy did that in the segment tonight, I popped. Because I've done that, legitimately done that before. And look, you do what you got to do. Matt Hardy is not dumb. Matt Hardy had a contract, and Matt Hardy wanted Adam Page to sign the contract, just like he did with Private Party. Now, only after they signed the contract did Private Party realize they had basically given Matt Hardy 30% of their earnings. Here, Matt was very open about it. He even told him, he said, look, for a measly 30% of your earnings, I can take you places and make you a millionaire like you've never been before. And Hangman said, sure, I'll sign the contract. And he whispered into the camera, and this was kind of dumb because he was a little too close to Hangman, but as Hangman was signing the document, Matt looked into the camera and said, I wanted you here. So here we go. This is exactly what I was talking about earlier. This is perfect. They acknowledge that there is a camera person there, which makes, again, what they did earlier in that segment even dumber. But Matt is acknowledging, I brought you here because I wanted you to document this. He's going to be very angry when he finds out about it, but everything's on the up and up. I was very open. I was very honest about things. Somehow Hangman didn't hear any of this. And as soon as he signed the contract, Matt said, oh, I got to go. And he left him at the bar and he left. So Matt Hardy is building his own stable of talent, apparently. I don't know if this is going to be the last of the people he tries to sign or what. We'll see where it goes. I'm not totally into this, but I am into the idea of Matt at least trying something different, not doing the broken stuff anymore. You know, and I like the broken stuff, but at some point you gotta change it up. You gotta try something different. You know, this is kind of a spin-off in a way, I think, of his old Money Matt character from Impact. Now he's trying to be Arliss, I guess. Remember Arliss from HBO? He's trying to be a sports agent here. He's trying to represent all of these guys. I'm open to it. We'll see where it goes. Hangman is just, again, he's kind of in this weird spot where I thought they were going to continue to do stuff maybe with him in the Dark Order. I think they're going to get back to that. I don't think we've seen the last of Hangman in the Dark Order. But there's no obvious spot for him because he's not really in the, he's not in the world title mix right now. He's not going to challenge Darby for the TNT title. He needs someone else to feud with. He needs something to do. It feels like this is just, hey, we got to give Hangman something to do. We don't have anything better for him. And so let's just go with him and Matt and see where it goes. But it does kind of feel to me like they're just stringing him along until they get to a point where they're ready to go back to him and Omega. They are going to, at some point, revisit the issue with him and Omega. He will challenge for the championship. I don't see it happening until the end of the year. You know, my prediction at the beginning of the year was Full Gear. 1 year after their Eliminator match could be when they face off for the championship, assuming Omega is still the champion at the end of the year. We had Chris Jericho in the Inner Circle being interviewed in the back by, pretty sure it was Dasha, before their match. It was going to be Jericho and MJF taking on the Acclaimed. So they're being interviewed, and Santana and Ortiz, they show up, and they tell... Now, was that a part that I missed? Did he swap the papers? Okay, apparently he swapped the papers. I must have missed that. He switched the contract. All right, so he's a smart drunk. See, I didn't see that part. Here, I'm just thinking this guy is just plastered, and he just signed his life away. But apparently, based on what you guys are telling me, he switched the contract. All right. Calm the fuck down. All right, Green in the chat. You know, I'm taking notes during the show. I look up, I look down, so calm the fuck down. Sometimes you miss shit. That's why I have you guys here. So if I miss something, you guys pick up the slack for me. It's like a team effort here. All right? Take a fucking drink. I love you, Green. I'm just kidding around. See, you guys are there backing me up. When I miss something important, you got to be there to back me. You got to tag in here. Get the hot tag. And take over. So Hangman apparently swapped the papers. But my point still stands. It feels to me like Hangman is just in this weird purgatory of sorts where he's not quite ready to ascend to the top yet. They've got other business that they're taking care of with Omega, but they got to find something for him to do. And again, he is one of the ones who is really being hurt by there being no live crowds. I mean, there's a lot of people who are being hurt by there being no live. And when I say live crowds, I mean, I don't mean 100 people or 1,000 people. I mean 5,000 people. It's going to be a while before we have that. It's going to be a while. So nothing you can do about that, but again, Hangman is one of those people who I think is being affected by that more than most. So Chris Jericho in the Inner Circle, like I said, they're being interviewed. And MJF shows up, his ribs are all taped up, and he tells Jericho's like, what happened? He tells Jericho, Sammy, punched me in the gut, he may have broken my rib. So now they have to go out there and have a match. Again, they take on the Acclaimed, Max Caster and Anthony Bowens, who are coming into their own. Every week we see them, you know, the Caster comes out, he's got the raps and the rhymes down. And so the more we get to see them and the more they work together here on Dynamite, the better they'll be. You know, they're a good young team. That's what we need more of. We need to see more good young teams. They got plenty of teams in AEW. So it's good that they're getting more TV time. I like that. Yeah, because to give them TV time once or twice and then they're not featured doesn't do them any good. You're going to really try to get these guys over. You got to put them on TV as much as possible. So they were targeting the ribs of MJF. He forced Caster into the corner. Jericho made a tag. And MJF and Jericho beat him down. Frequent tags back and forth. That went into the commercial. So they come back from commercial. We're heading into the finish. The referee is distracted. Jericho goes for the lion's salt. And as he hits the ropes, Caster, who's on the outside, whacks him in the head with the boombox. And Jericho goes down. Close near fall. I didn't think they were going to get it because Jericho and MJF are number one contenders now. I didn't think they were going to take the loss here. So Jericho kicked out. Acclaim set up for their claim to fame finish. Jake Hager knocked Caster off the top rope. Jericho landed the Judas Effect for the win. So after the match, Sammy Guevara's music hits. Sammy was the only member of the Inner Circle who was missing from this whole segment until he came out. And out to the ring comes Sammy, and he confronts Jericho, and he says to him, "Do you remember what I told you back in December?" I think he said maybe the December 9th episode of Dynamite. He said, "If there was one more issue with MJF, just one, I was done." And he goes, "I'm here to tell you I'm done." And what that means is that he is out of the Inner Circle. Sammy Guevara has left the Inner Circle because of MJF. He gave Jericho an ultimatum. MJF is still fucking around with him. He's done. Puts the mic down and he walks out. Alex Marvez catches up with him after quitting the Inner Circle and wants to know, well, what's going on here? What's next for you? And Guevara tells him that he just needs to take some time away and just refocus and just take some time away from this place. So I don't know how long he's going to be gone for. You know, I don't know if he may, who knows? He could show up in Impact, right? Who knows? Maybe they'll sell it by having him wrestle on Impact for 6 weeks. But I would guess MJF or Sammy is going to be gone for a little while. But this could be the beginning of a Sammy Guevara babyface turn. I will say that as I'm watching all of this happen, and by the way, when he quit and he went to go walk off, if you look at MJF, even though he was supposedly in pain with his ribs, he had this look on his face. He had a smile he couldn't hide. He seemed very happy about this development. But I couldn't help but wonder if we were going to get some kind of big swerve at the end of all that. I don't know that it's going to be a big swerve, but if we were to find out that Sammy and MJF were actually in cahoots and just orchestrated this entire thing, this whole sham of Sammy pretending he doesn't like Max. And in the end, they work together to oust Jericho. And Jericho gets booted from the group by both of them, who pull a power play and try to get him out of there. And the only issue with that is that it really doesn't fit with MJF's character. You could do it, but it really, honestly, what really works is exactly the way that it's, as predictable as it may be, the scenario that really works, I think, the most is that at some point MJF gets exposed for trying to break up the Inner Circle. But what if they were working together? And the end result was that Jericho is, you know, you just set it up perfectly where one day Jericho's in the middle and then he just gets attacked and they, you know, kick him out of the group. I'm not saying that's where it's going to go, but it just doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit MJF's character. Tony Schiavone brought out Sting. Another hard week at work for the man called Sting. Sting comes out, he was going to talk about his upcoming street fight at Revolution, him and Darby Allin against Team Taz. Before he could even get a word out, Taz pops up on the screen. He is sitting in a truck, right? Pickup truck, I think it was. Powerhouse Hobbs, who I maintain, I said this on the podcast on Sunday, Butch Reed, who just passed away, was a big fan of Powerhouse Hobbs. He would even leave little Instagram comments on some of his photos. And his family said that he was a big fan and a big proponent of Will Hobbs. And the first time he saw Will Hobbs, he made the comment to his, I guess his kids, he said, "That's the next Hacksaw." Because before he came to WWE, Butch Reed's nickname was Hacksaw. He wasn't the Natural until he came to WWE. He was Hacksaw Butch Reed. And he said, "That's the next Hacksaw," or "That's the new Hacksaw." I think Hacksaw Hobbs has a great ring to it. I mean, Powerhouse Hobbs is not a terrible name, but Hacksaw Hobbs blows it out of the fucking water. So I would love it if at some point, out of respect, he adopted that as his new name. Hacksaw Hobbs. I'm hoping. But he's sitting in the passenger seat, and Taz says, hey, Sting, I want you to see, we got our passenger. We got a buddy of yours here. And Brian Cage gets out of the truck, and tied to the back of the truck in a body bag is Darby Allin. And they zip him up in the bag, get back in the car. They begin to drive the car. There were no camera cuts here. So that was Darby Allin in the body bag being dragged along the pavement in the parking lot off into the distance. And again, no camera cuts. I guarantee you, Darby Allin insisted, I'm not going to do this segment unless I can do it for real. You got to let me do it. Because he, you know, he lives for shit. Like, he probably was getting off on this. He was probably all zipped up in the bag doing, well, you don't need me to tell you. He was probably getting off on this. He loves shit like this. So he got dragged away. And Sting, hey, what can I say? You know, look, some weeks work is a little more eventful than others. Another eventful week at work for Sting, who walks out, says nothing, and immediately walks to the back. And they've already promoted another appearance for him on TV next week. I give up. I said this weeks ago, Sting does not have to be, Sting should not be on TV every week. I understand now he's part of a match that's coming up at a pay-per-view that is still a month away. March 7th is Revolution. And Sting is not on TV wrestling. Why must he be on the show every week? It's like, I feel like it's a running joke at this point. When he comes out, will he speak? Will he say a word? If he does, he might get three of them out, and then he goes to the back. The more that we see Sting, the less special he feels. So unless he's going to come out and actually do something, I don't understand what the purpose is of having him on TV every single week. It's just ridiculous to me. Just skip a week. So now he's being promoted for next week. He's going to come out and call out Team Taz. We'll see. We'll see if he actually gets a word out next week. But just, you know, if Sting was going to be off TV for 2 weeks and then all of a sudden, next week, Sting is back on Dynamite. He's got something to say. He's pissed. Sting has demanded a live mic on Dynamite. All of a sudden, people are going to be like, man, what's he going to say? We haven't seen Sting in a few weeks. Oh, this should be good. Now let's talk about this tournament. All right. We have a women's eliminator tournament. AEW Women's Championship matches on the line at the Revolution pay-per-view coming up on March 7th. We do finally have brackets to show you, so I will do that now. And what you see on your screen is the Super 16, which I think now is the Super 15. Women's World Championship Eliminator Tournament. The Japanese side of the bracket looks like this. Yuka Sakazaki against Mei Suruga. We've got Venny, who some people have told me also goes by Asuka, against Emi Sakura. Maki Ito against Ryo Mizunami. And Aja Kong, the legendary Aja Kong, taking on Rin Kadokura. Now, these Japanese matches are going to be filmed empty arena style on a closed set in Japan. The first round of the Japanese bracket, so all those matches you see there on the right-hand side, those are going to be airing this Monday at 7 Eastern on the AEW YouTube channel. So those matches are not going to be airing on Dynamite. I don't know why. I don't know if it has more to do maybe with the lack of TNT. I mean, if there's anybody who's listening to this or watching this or is going to be listening to this who perhaps lives in Japan and can shed some more light on this, it's possible that people just don't have access to TNT, or at least not as quickly as we do here. So maybe it's just easier to air those matches and quicker for people to watch those matches on YouTube. But whatever the case may be, if you want to watch it, Monday at 7 Eastern, 6 Central is where you can see those matches. If you want to see Maki Ito, you got to watch it on YouTube. Now, the U.S. side of the bracket, which if you are watching this right now, it's on your left side. looks like this. Thunder Rosa against legit Layla Hirsch. That was the match tonight. I'm going to talk about that here in a second. Serena Deeb against Riho. That's coming up next week. Nyla Rose against Tay Conti. And Britt Baker against Anna Jay. And I am not only am I going to kind of tell you how I see things shaking out here, but I'm going to tell you who I think is winning the whole thing. I already told you last week who I think is winning the whole thing. But we always have new viewers, so I'm happy to repeat myself. I don't mind doing it. God knows I do it every week. Sometimes that's how you got to drill home certain points. They don't get through on the first try, so you just say it over and over again until people hear it. Legit Layla Hirsch against Thunder Rosa. We had some chain wrestling to begin the match here. I like that. And the match turned out to be pretty good. Nothing overly special. I dig Layla Hirsch. I dig her style. Jim Ross, every time she's on TV, all he can talk about is her short, stubby legs. I mean, we get it. We could see it. But she's a shooter. And that's why the person before in the Super Chat made the point, that might have been Ryan, that she would be the perfect female fit in Team Taz if at some point they wanted her to link up with that group. She went up to the top rope. Went for a moonsault. Thunder Rosa got her knees up. Rosa went for the Fire Thunder Driver. Hirsch transitioned into the Cross Arm Breaker. And Rosa powered out of it. Hit the Fire Thunder Driver for the win to advance in the tournament. So here's how I see this shaking out. And let me put the bracket back up because it's just easier to follow this way. So we know that Rosa has already moved on. Here's how I see it shaking out. I think Rosa is losing to Riho. Riho, they said, has not been on Dynamite, has not had a match on Dynamite in 11 months. And she is the former champion. She was a big deal there for a while in AEW. I think Rosa loses to Riho. I think Riho then loses to Britt Baker. And I think Britt Baker goes on to win the entire thing. Because Britt Baker should be the one taking that championship from Hikaru Shida at Revolution. Now, I think that she's going to the finals. I think Baker is facing, I'm going to say either Maki Ito, and I would say Maki Ito, but then she's got to go one-on-one with Aja Kong, which is no easy task. I'm thinking either Maki Ito or Yuka Sakazaki. Yuka was featured on AEW television pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic hit, and I think everything just went to hell. As far as her career went in AEW. So I'm thinking it's either Maki Ito or Sakazaki in the finals against Britt Baker. But Britt Baker is my pick to win the entire thing. I think a heel has to take that championship off of Shida. And I think that Britt Baker is the perfect person to do that. You can come back around at some point later on, even a few months from now, to Baker and Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa could win the championship off of her. But she is my pick to win the tournament. I'm going with the doctor. I'm going with the good doctor. Ems Sanchez in the chat says the god of love and piss. Yes, that is what Maki Ito called her. Actually, I think she called herself the deity of shit. I think she knows what she's doing. I think this woman knows exactly what she's doing. She's got a lot of people talking about her. I think she's being very smart. Tony Schiavone, there was an interview, because he's the interview guy. So Tony Schiavone was conducting an interview earlier in the day with Jungle Boy, sitting in what appeared to be Jungle Boy's kitchen. Very odd place to do an interview. He said the Marco stunt was okay, unfortunately, after being kidnapped by FTR. He talked about the match a few weeks ago against Dax Harwood that I think everybody praised. It was a great match, and it was a huge win for Jungle Boy. That was a really big, I think, turning point for him in his singles career in this company. And credit to Dax Harwood as well, who's a very good professional wrestler. He went in there and made Jungle Boy look legit in that match. So he talked about that, said it was the hardest fight of his career. He said, we didn't tell on FTR. We didn't get you guys suspended. In fact, just the opposite. We don't want you guys suspended. We want you guys in the ring. The last thing we want is you guys suspended and off TV. So you can't blame us for that. You can't blame Jurassic Express for that. He says, I want you back on Dynamite so that I can make you, talking about Dax, so I can make you my bitch. So the WWE talent are not the only talent who love throwing that word around. I've said that on the podcast, right? All these WWE promos, you know they're getting serious when they start throwing the B word around. And that goes for the men and the women. They do it, I feel like, every week. You could have Carmella dropping the word in a promo. Roman Reigns drops the word in a promo. Kevin Owens drops it. Randy Orton drops it. Edge drops it. It's like calling Marty McFly chicken in Back to the Future, which I think was the movie that actually aired tonight before Dynamite. I think that was the lead-in. You call Marty McFly a chicken, it doesn't matter where he is or what he's doing. He stops in his tracks, and you are fucked. You don't want to call him a chicken. So in wrestling, just remember that. If you're going to cut a promo, if you're trying to get your message across to somebody and they're not hearing it, right? It's not making sense. They're not taking you seriously. You just call them a bitch. That's it. That's all you have to do. I'm going to make you my bitch. You look like a bitch. You dance like a bitch. You sing like a bitch. You wrestle like a bitch. You are a bitch. That's it. That's wrestler speak. That means that shit's getting real now. No different in AEW. Which brings us to our main event. It's Kenny Omega and Kenta. This was Kenta's in-ring AEW debut, taking on Jon Moxley and Lance Archer. Falls Count Anywhere match. Kenta had the IWGP United States Championship briefcase with him that he's been carrying around for 6 months. Because of the pandemic, he never got his match with Moxley. This poor fucker's been carrying this briefcase around for half a year. So he brought it out with him, and Moxley had the IWGP US title. Now, he's been champion for the entire year. Exactly 1 year ago is when he last defended that title. I think it was against Minoru Suzuki. And this is the first time that he has been acknowledged on Dynamite as the IWGP US champion, and that he has actually walked out with the IWGP US championship belt. By the way, this match with Moxley and Kenta that's going to be airing on TV on February 26th on New Japan Strong, that match is already taped. That match has been in the can apparently since the beginning of December. So it's going to be funny if we end up seeing Kenta win the championship, looking back at this, knowing that Moxley was walking around with a title that he already lost. So, and I don't know the outcome of the match. I would have to think that, boy, Kenta might want to hang it up if, after all this time, all this waiting, and then he finally gets the shot and he loses. How fucking embarrassing that would be. My guess is he's winning the title. But for tonight, Moxley had his belt with him. Darlene thinks that the IWGP US belt is beautiful. I think it is a very good looking belt. You know what else is beautiful? This. Before we move on here into what happened in this glorious main event, I have to present you with this glorious free trial. This is one of our new partners. Say hello, everybody. Say hello to Amazon Music, because they're giving you guys a 30-day free trial, courtesy of the Sound Off. All you got to do is go to that link on your screen, getamazonmusic.com/Solomonster. Sign up and you get 30 days free of the Amazon Music Unlimited service. You can listen to the Sound Off on there too, plus any other music you might want to listen to. So take advantage of it. They're our new partners. Say hello to Amazon and get yourself a free 30-day trial of the service. I love giving away free shit for you guys. I hope you guys will take advantage of that. So, this main event here. Bell rings. Kenta immediately hits Moxley with the briefcase. Just wallops him with it. Then he nails Archer with it from behind, who no-sold it. Now, I knew when they announced this Falls Count Anywhere stipulation, it was probably going to end up being this just wild, wacky brawl. I like a well-done Falls Count Anywhere match, because so many times in WWE, you know, and maybe even sometimes in AEW, although I don't know how many of these they've had in AEW, but so many times I've seen Falls Count Anywhere matches where they don't take advantage of the stipulation. So they'll brawl around ringside. They might go into the crowd. And then they go right back to the ring, and it's such a waste. Some of the most fun I had, honestly, during the Attitude Era, were when they were having fun with the hardcore title. And, you know, I enjoyed the Crash Holly 24/7 hardcore title stuff. But when you had Al Snow and Bob Holly and the Big Boss Man, and they were brawling into the back, into the snow, it was snowing outside, I think, once when Road Dogg won the hardcore title. There was a SummerSlam where Boss Man and Al Snow literally brawled out of the building across a street with incoming traffic, cars driving up and down the street, into either a bar or a restaurant that was right across the way. You had the battle into the Mississippi River, right, at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre with Holly and Snow. So I loved stuff like that. I just thought that was a lot of fun back when they did it all those years ago. And so many times now, they don't take advantage of the stipulation. Here, they did a better job of actually taking advantage of the stipulation. They didn't just go outside the ring, although a lot of time was spent around ringside. But they at least went up into the stands. They went to the back. They ended up in the kitchen. They could have even been a little more creative and taken it to a couple of other places. But I like the chaos of this match is part of what made it so fun. Omega hit a garbage can assisted moonsault to John Moxley from the middle rope. Kenta followed that up immediately with a corner drop kick, kicking the can back into Moxley's face. Mr. E in the chat, I'm pretty sure it was the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. You talking about the Mississippi River? You might go fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure it was the February pay-per-view. I could be wrong, but I believe it was on that show. Because Fully Loaded was a summer show. When they brawled into the river, it was cold outside. So I'm pretty sure it was still wintertime when that happened. So Lance Archer brings a ladder into the ring, and he uses it on the heels. They go to break, they come back, and here's where things really picked up. They come back from break, nobody's in the ring, they're all in the audience where the wrestlers are. They're brawling over there, and Kenta gives Peter Avalon the go-to-sleep. So, go-to-sleep little jobber guy. That was the end of Peter Avalon. They brawled up the stairs and then into the building, into the kitchen area. All four men ended up in the kitchen area at Daly's place. Kenta gave Moxley a DDT on top of a stainless steel table. What did Excalibur call it? I actually like this JR line. Excalibur saw them brawling on top of this stainless steel table. And he said, they're brawling on top of the kitchen surface. Or he used some weird technical term for it. And Jim Ross was like, it's a table, Excalibur. Like, you don't have to overcomplicate it. So he gave him a DDT on there and then put a crossface on him until Lance Archer hit Kenta with a box of potatoes. Spuds were everywhere. Moxley used a potato as a weapon. And Tony Schiavone got the line in. He potatoed him. It would have been commentary malpractice for somebody not to use that line. So at least we got the potato line. Omega and Moxley, they brawled back outside and then eventually back into the arena down by ringside. Moxley pulled a kendo stick. Of course he did. Moxley pulled a kendo stick out. Leave the kendo sticks, please, for Hikaru Shida. That's her gimmick. Let her have that. Let her have that. So he used the stick on Omega. Kenta and Archer, they're now back from the kitchen. They brawl back through the entrance tunnel over by the announce desk. Archer is going to powerbomb Kenta through the announce table. So the announcers scatter. Jim Ross is like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. He gets up. Tony Schiavone gets up. And Archer is going to powerbomb Kenta. Kenta, though, wiggles out of it. And Archer is now going to charge towards Kenta. Now, I figured, okay, Kenta's going to duck or sidestep him, and Archer's going to go flying over the announce table. I don't know where Archer went. Kenta did manage to avoid him, but he immediately jumped off the stage down onto John Moxley, who had been laid across the table by the ring announcer area where Justin Roberts sits. Omega had put him on the table, and Kenta comes flying off the stage with a double stomp. Table didn't break. table, it did fall over. It did not break, but that was a hell of a spot to watch him flying through the air. I didn't expect him to go flying off the stage. If you were wearing 3D glasses, it would have looked like he was coming right in at you. They shot that beautifully. So that was a hell of a spot. So now we're down to Archer and Omega in the ring. Archer with a massive choke slam. Archer then walks the top rope. Hits a moonsault onto Omega for a near fall. Archer now is setting up for the blackout to Omega. Out come the Good Brothers, the Impact Tag Team Champions, Anderson and Gallows, who believe on Saturday, right, at the pay-per-view that Impact is having, No Surrender, they're defending their Impact Tag Team titles against Private Party. So they come out for the distraction. Archer goes to chokeslam Carl Anderson, who turns it into a gun stun. Jake the Snake Roberts does not want to be left out. Jake's out there with them. He's watching all of this carnage. He's watching all of this chaos. And he's like, I can't be left out of this. So he climbs into the ring, and a little slower than the last short arm clothesline I've seen him give, but he hits the short arm clothesline, a Jake Roberts trademark, to Carl Anderson, who goes down and sells the move. And Gallows unloads a right hand. As soon as Jake turns around, he gets popped by a right hand by Gallows. Omega then teases a V-trigger to Jake, which would have killed him. Comes off the ropes, but Moxley is back. He's got a barbed wire baseball bat. Buries it into Omega's midsection. Kenta's back. Hits the GTS to John Moxley. Good Brothers hit the magic killer to Archer. And the V-trigger connects. Omega then goes to lift up Lance Archer for the one-winged angel, but he can't do it. Now, he can't do it because he had a barbed wire bat buried in his gut 15 seconds before this. But Lance Archer is a big fucking guy, so he can't get him up. He says to Anderson and Gallows, help me get him up. So they give him the assist. He gets him up, hits the one-winged angel, and gets the pin. So Kenny Omega and Kenta. It would have been bad if Kenta lost in his in-ring debut on Dynamite. This was a hell of a main event. This was just fun. This was a fun fucking sprint all over the building, into the back, into the kitchen. We had potatoes. We had everything. You had barbed wire, baseball bat. You had garbage cans, all the usual plunder. The potatoes, though, I think were the highlight. The potatoes actually have more personality than some of the people I see on WWE television. Maybe they're just not being given promo time. But, which reminds me, I'll have to watch NXT tomorrow. But that main event was outstanding. I loved it. It was a lot of fun, all action. Get you hyped up for Kenta and Moxley, but also shine a spotlight, deserving spotlight on Lance Archer, who, in recent months, over the last 6-8 months, hasn't really had much of a spotlight shown on him. So that was nice to see. Even Jake got in on the action a little bit. So I thought it was a lot of fun. If it wasn't the best Impact or AEW main event on Dynamite, it's top 2 or 3. Again, I'd have to go back again and watch the parking lot brawl from a few months ago with Santana and Ortiz and Best Friends. I know that gets a lot of praise, deservedly so. You can't go wrong, honestly, with either one of those matches. This was, I wouldn't say this saved the show, but this definitely took what I thought, if this main event was an A, it took a B. And in that last segment, it was elevated to an A, at least for that segment. This main event was, on a whole other level. Just a lot of fun. Now, next Wednesday, they're back live again, because they were taped this week. They are live next week. FTR is going to take on Matt and Mike Seidel. I didn't even know there was a Mike Seidel, but apparently there is. He's going to be in action next week. Riho takes on Serena Deeb. Sting is going to call out Team Taz. Another hard night at work for Sting coming up next week. We'll see if he breaks a sweat. And the Young Bucks are going to defend their tag team titles against Santana and Ortiz. So another act on the show that I've talked recently about as kind of being put on the back burner a little bit, and I was hoping that soon we'd have the chance to see Santana and Ortiz start to break out again in the tag team division. And next week they're getting a tag team title match. Now, I don't expect them to win, but if they win, MJF and Jericho are next in line, I guess, to challenge, probably at the pay-per-view, to challenge for the championship. So I actually do believe that there is a chance we could get a title change next week. I'm going to say no, but I don't think the outcome here is as predictable as some people might think, because they could work it where the titles come to the Inner Circle, and now you've got a real problem because these guys are going to have to defend against Jericho and MJF, which is going to cause more friction within the ranks of the Inner Circle. So I wouldn't be so sure about that finish next week. I wouldn't be so sure about that. I didn't hear any mention, by the way, of Shaq or Jade Cargill, unless I missed it. Yeah, that's a big match they've got coming up on Dynamite in a few weeks. Surprised they didn't really talk more about that in any great detail tonight. Let's see what you guys thought of the show. Wow. 83% of you vote thumbs up on this episode of Dynamite. 83.2, to be exact. 16.8% thumbs down. So that's a pretty damn good score right there so far. For Dynamite, let's see what you guys thought of NXT. 68% thumbs up, 31.9% thumbs down. So get in on that. Let me know what you guys thought of the shows tonight. At Solomonster is the handle on Twitter. If you want to let your voices be heard, let me know what you thought of this head-to-head battle tonight. We'll find out tomorrow in the ratings who came out on top in this head-to-head battle. I'm going to get your feedback on what you thought of this episode of Dynamite or anything else, any other questions you might have. Where we leave off? There we go. Ken terminated. What's going on, Ken? Always good to see Ken in the chat. I appreciate Ken and his support, always joining for these streams. Says, let's see here. His comment about Butch Reed keeps getting deleted. Yeah, YouTube can be stupid like that sometimes. It's like an auto filter thing, or sometimes you use certain words. Anyway, he says, I was talking about how I don't think Butch Reed would have been a long term champion like Honky Tonk Man if he was the one to beat Steamboat. What do you think? Yeah, probably not. I don't think so. So I think he would have lost it a lot sooner. Especially, look, if Honky Tonk Man outright refused to do the job to Savage in early 88, you know, I don't know that Butch Reed would have done the same thing, because Honky was thinking, if I leave and go to WCW, it's going to hurt my value if I lose here on this big NBC show. So I think either way, Butch Reed would not have held that championship for nearly as long as the Honky Tonk Man. Tyler Williams, Dynamite was great tonight following the trend of February being the best month for AEW. What is your prediction for the Elimination Tournament Finals? Britt Baker, as I mentioned before, she was my pick from the moment I found out they were doing the Eliminator, and I'm sticking with her. Joe Olivo with the $20. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I give you a very hearty thumbs up. More hearty than Orange Cassidy. It is official, Sammy Guevara is a babyface. Is a babyface. The Inner Circle is crumbling. I think there should be a match with Sammy against MJF next week. Well, I don't know. Based on what Sammy said tonight, I don't think we're going to see him on TV for at least a few. I would think you got to keep him off television for at least a few weeks. Depending on what's going on at the pay-per-view, you still have another 4 weeks between now and Revolution. Jason J, Silk Stockings up next after the stream. Oh, one of the best theme songs of any TV show in USA Network history. Every time you would hear that woman moan, you knew Silk Stockings was about to come on. My grandma used to watch that show. I didn't watch it with her because that would have been fucking weird. But Naif Al-Safar, thank you for the $10, Naif. Always with the love. Very much appreciate it. Ryan Spies, it wasn't Mantar, but there was a Minotaur on Impact yesterday, so there is that. Well, did he have a name? Why was there a Minotaur on Impact? you've got to give me, I mean, you got to give me some context here. You've not given me enough information here, Ryan. I need to know the who, what, where, when, why, and how. Pedro, I think Anthony Bowens is a star in the making as a singles far down the road. What do you think? Haven't seen enough of him as a single. He looks great. You know, these two guys, I think, can have a lot of success as a tag team. It's way too early to know whether or not he can succeed on his own as a single. But, you know, again, they're very young, and so the sky's the limit. They can stay healthy. Why can't both guys go on to have successful careers? Why does there always have to be a Jannetty? Maybe both guys will go on to become big single stars. Dry chicken without flavor. Hey, by the way, dry chicken without flavor. I heard you shouted at, you're dropping super chats to Tony Schiavone over on that post AEW stream. Was it last week? I heard, oh, you don't think I pick up on these things. I heard Tony Schiavone shout out dry chicken without flavor and my antenna went up. I said, what? I felt betrayed. It's all right. I forgive you. When every time Justin Roberts says North Carolina, I am calling Kenny Omega Michael Jordan. I find that incredibly fucking annoying, though. I know it's some kind of inside joke deal, but I just find it fucking annoying. Jacob Donnelly with the $10. Sticking to my guns that this is all a big ruse with Sammy and MJF, and they all turn on Jericho. And as I'm talking about Jacob, I see Nia Jax and her hole. So Jacob thinks that it's a ruse with Sammy and MJF and they all turn on Jericho. That's what I just said before. So yeah, I mean, it's the only issue I have with it is that it really, him working with somebody else, unless he then turns on Sammy after working with him this entire time, then he's like, ah, fuck you, and he turns on him too. I don't know. I don't know that it fits that he would be in cahoots with somebody else. I could see him trying to sabotage the entire group. But that would be a hell of a swerve, though, if that's where this went. In Israel, Darby Allin continues to impress me. He's gotten better since he debuted. Poe, the poet's poet. Say that five times fast. Poe, the poet's poet. Hey, Solomon Monster, I've been listening to you for 10 years. This is my first time super chatting because I'm a bit tipsy. Keep up the good work. Have you been downing shots? If so, you'll have to employ my over-the-shoulder trick that I was telling you about a little while ago. Original Project with the $25 Super Chat. I actually became a fan of the Acclaimed tonight. Did you enjoy the show? I did. But I enjoyed it a lot more when that main event was over. Rodimus Prime with the 15, Sammy turning face and being done with the Inner Circle, one of the best moments of the show. Can't wait to see what happens next. Dry Chicken, the Nightmare Family is starting to turn into AEW's version of Chaos, New Japan faction for those who don't know. Remind me, is Yano part of Chaos? I should probably know this, but is Yano part of Chaos? I always forget these things. Jared M. with the $45 Super Chat. Wow. Baby Dolph needs Vicky as his on-screen. Well, you may as well. You know what? You're right. You may as well. He already kind of acts like his brother. What? I was going to say good. I was going to say so. I won't say it. But yes, there obviously was a history there with Dolph and Vicky, so why not? Why not just complete the package there? What is Vicky Guerrero even doing? I mean, she manages Nyla Rose. We never see her. Not on Dynamite. I mean, I would say that's been a very uneventful run that she has had on this show. Very, very lackluster. One and only with the $5. I guess Archer is a full on face now. Feel like there was more he could have done as a heel. I'm just glad they're finally using him again. Look, I think it's just one of those things where this is the role for him that they need him or that they want him for right now. And if a program opens up and it ends up with him working as a heel again, then he'll be a heel. He hasn't done anything to be a babyface, so I don't consider this a turn. Now, the longer this goes on for, if he's only facing heels, then you can say, okay, he's a babyface. But he's only been doing this for such a short period of time. All it takes is in a few weeks on TV for him to attack one of the babyfaces because they pissed him off for some reason, and all of a sudden he's a heel or he's a tweener. So I wouldn't necessarily call Lance Archer a heel just yet, or a babyface. GV2186, managerial Matt Hardy is brilliant. Food Hive, I popped for the Acclaim tonight for the first time. Taryn Riddick, with the $5. Hangman switched the contract for one of his own when Matt wasn't looking. Think he got over on Matt there. Well, it sounds like it. That's the part I missed. He outsmarted Matt Hardy. Kayfabe for the win. Predicting Hangman beats Omega for the belt, but it all out, since it would make 2 years after he failed to beat Jericho because he was not ready. I'd say full gear only because, well, for two reasons. Number one, it's a year since their last match. And I think full gear, that was the whole inside joke with Hangman. I mean, that's how the event got the name. That's kind of like Hangman's event now. But yeah, if they do it earlier, then All Out would be the place to do it. Dry Chicken, something tells that Private Party, Hangman, and Matt Hardy will accidentally get involved with the Elite storyline, which will lead towards Omega and Paige. The Cheeseburger. Are we going to see AEW talent in this year's G1? A little too early to tell. Longer this working relationship goes on for, it's certainly a possibility. At least a few names. But I think a lot of that also is going to depend on where we are at in terms of travel restrictions when it comes time for the G1. I'm assuming the G1 will be back to its normal time this summer. Last year, they had to push it back a few months. You know what? I think that might tell the tale more than anything else. Travel restrictions. Because I don't think this is going to be lifted so soon. I think there's people who have it in their head that, well, you know, things are going to just go back to the way they were in the summer. And I'm watching this shit every single day. I want to believe that. I really do. But I think we're in for another year of this, unfortunately. And it sucks because, I mean, this is the period where we could be having so much fun with this stuff in terms of the back and forth, and people now can go to Japan and be at some of the New Japan shows. And this just fucks with everything, right? They're just so limited in what they can do. So, you know, they're making the most of it, but I mean, we haven't even gotten to the real fun stuff yet. Dry Chicken, something tells me, oh, I said that already. Actually, did you send that twice? Yes, you did. See, I knew I wasn't crazy. You sent that twice. Well, thank you for the super chat. Jacob Barnes, thank you for the $5, man. I appreciate it. Oz and Glorious with the $5. Shivani mentioned on the post show recently that Sting wants to be present as much as possible, and he is getting paid. Well, yeah, of course. I kind of figured that you know, if he's going to get paid per appearance, then yeah, he's going to want to be on the show all the time. Are you kidding me? He'd want to be in every segment. If it were a segment-by-segment payday, it would be the Sting show. Sting is not stupid. Sting did not make the money he made in his career by being dumb. Food Hive. It's a plastic belt. Where's Captain Planet? The Murder Hawk should have seen Private Party go after the Good Brothers. Possible they weren't there. Uffman Entertainment, buy or sell, biggest damning insult. Calling someone a B-word or telling Triple H to take his balls out of Stephanie's purse. Well, that works too. If you want a match with Triple H and he's not going to give it to you, that's the go-to line. Did you forget your balls in your wife's purse? That's it. You got your match. If AJ Styles wants a match so badly at WrestleMania with Triple H, that's all he has to do. It's come out on TV and talk about his balls being in her purse. It's as simple as that. Let's go to Puerto Rico, 939.
Yeah, I enjoyed the show. Show was really good. It was one of the best shows they've done in a while, and the main event was awesome. And yeah, there's a lot of things that I liked about the show. Some things I didn't.
Like what?
I know there's a lot of people that are. I mean, there's a lot of AEW fans on the chat that I know love the Young Bucks, but I don't know. I mean, I can enjoy their matches, but their promo work. I don't know, man. I just don't get their characters. I don't know what they're supposed to be. Are they frat boys? I mean, are they like they're jocks? I don't know what the Young Bucks are. I don't know if they're baby faces. I don't know if they're heels. I just don't get their whole characters. And the way they set up the match with Santana and Ortiz, man, I just wish Santana and Ortiz would do more on the show.
Yeah, I agree, and I've been saying that, and it looks. I mean, look, they're getting a title match next week, so we'll see what the outcome of that is. But they should be featured more. They've just been background players, I think, for too long.
Yeah, exactly. And I was hoping, like, if they would revisit that rivalry, that was like the first rivalries in the promotion. If they would revisit that rivalry, it would be with a better reason than just like, hey, let's just pick a match, and let's give them a title match. I don't know. That was a little bit too much for me. Like, I didn't like that. But the rest of the show was really good. And so, yeah, I had a question. Here's my question. So there was a question I wanted to ask you last week. So, because I saw Wrestling with Regret. He did a video about the cinematic matches of 2020. And I wanted to ask you, Solomon, what is the cinematic match that you thought was the worst? And which one do you thought was the best cinematic match?
I mean, I don't know which one would be the worst. I mean, I don't remember all of them off the top of my head. I'm sure there were a couple I didn't like as much. The one that I liked the most in terms of the cinematic matches. Look, I enjoyed the Boneyard match and I enjoyed the Stadium Stampede. If you... Yeah. Wanted me to choose one over the other, I'd probably go Boneyard. I just think I think it was the perfect way for Undertaker to go out. I enjoyed, I just think I enjoyed it more than I probably would have if they were in the ring at wrestling. In fact, I know I would have, liked it a lot less probably if they were in the ring. So I probably would go with Boneyard as my favorite and the least favorite. You know, honestly, the only one the Firefly Funhouse match, it was unique. There were moments that I popped for in terms of some of the callbacks, but maybe that one, again, I don't remember all of the cinematic matches that I saw last year. I feel like there were so many of them. I guess you had the Money in the Bank matches. Maybe,
give me a moment.
Maybe it was one of those. Yeah, maybe one of the Money in the Bank matches from Titan Tower that they did in May, but I don't have the full list in front of me. I'm sure I'm forgetting something.
For me, the Adam Cole Velveteen Dream match, that left a lot to be desired.
Okay, yes, that's right. The parking lot brawl. Yeah, maybe that one. You know what? See, that's what I mean. I totally forgot about that one. I think everybody's totally forgotten about Velveteen Dream. Boy, you talk about going from the penthouse to the outhouse. Yeah, it might be
Let's not go there.
It might be that one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I'm working right now at the hotel, so I just got some guests here. So thank you so much for allowing me to call Solomon Monster.
Absolutely. Well, you better get back to work then.
Yeah. Yeah, and everybody have a good night. Yeah.
All right, you too. Look at this, calling in the middle of his shift. I'm going to cost the guy his job. But he had to ask his question. So we opened with our good friend from Puerto Rico, and now we go, let's see, where are we going to go? We could do a few. So if you want to try to get in, now's the time. Let's go to Illinois. How about that? 630.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, Salamonster?
That's me.
Hey, how's it going? This is Jack from Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, Jack.
I watched the show tonight, and I thought the main event was pretty good, like you said, either up there with that parking lot brawl match with LAX and Best Friends is one of the best of the show. One thing I liked on the show tonight in particular was the Inner Circle segment with MJF and Sammy Guevara. Let's see. Yeah, I wasn't expecting Sammy Guevara to be kicked out or leaving the Inner Circle this quick. I thought that maybe they were going to drag that out for a few more weeks up until maybe Revolution. Maybe he costs them the title match against the Young Bucks.
Well, he could still do that. He could still do that. In fact, in fact, he probably will. Now that you mentioned that, because he said he's going to take some time away. We may not see him again until the pay-per-view, and then he comes out and costs him the match.
Yeah, for sure.
I can see that.
Yeah, he said he was going to be away for a little while. Maybe he's gone up until the pay-per-view and gets a little payback at MJF and the Inner Circle. But
yeah, absolutely.
One of the question I had actually was about Chris Jericho. Do you see him sort of retiring or ending his career in AEW or possibly going back and finishing in WWE? What are your thoughts on that?
He'll be back in WWE at some point. I mean, it's just inevitable. Everybody goes back at some point, and he spent so many years there, and that's where I'm sure he's getting paid well now too, but yeah, that's where he'll be paid well. Look, at some point, do I think he'll be back, even if just for a one-off, not necessarily a full contract? Yes, he'll be back for that, and he'll be back for a Hall of Fame induction. It may not be for several more years, but Jericho at this point, how old is Jericho now? Is 40? Is he 50, or is he probably a little shy?
Mid, late 40s, yeah, early 50s, probably
late 40s, maybe. So I think the days of him signing a big long-term contract are over, but I do think he'll be back in a WWE ring at some point.
Yeah, that's something that I had on my mind for a while. I remember when he first signed with AEW, I think that his contract leaked, and he signed for, 3 or 4 years, something like that?
Well, it wasn't that it leaked. I think he basically said that he signed, I think, a four-year... Him and Omega and all those guys, I think Omega too, they all signed 4-year deals.
Yeah. So that got me thinking, if once it's up, would he retire or would he just go back to WWE and end things where he basically made a big name for himself?
Yeah, Dry Chicken Without Flavor in the chat says that he is 75 years old. I stand corrected. There you go. Chris Jericho apparently is 75 years old, you smartass. Now, everybody in the chat is saying...
Damn, he looks good for 75.
Well, yeah, he's all right. Everyone's saying 50. All right, so there you go. He just turned 50 a few months ago. So, yeah, his day... He will not be signing another 4-year deal anywhere. Put it that way.
No, I don't see.
Good. Anything else?
Yeah, that was the question. No, that was what I wanted to call about.
Awesome.
Thank you for taking my call, though. Keep up the great work. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for the call. So that's from Chicago. And now we're gonna crisscross the country, and we're going to go from Chicago to the Lone Star State, 409.
Hey, Solid Monster?
That's me.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Who am I talking to?
This is Joseph from Silsby, Texas.
Joseph from Silsby. Home of the world's most strongest man, right? World's strongest man?
Yes, it is.
There you go.
Yes, world's strongest man. Love your show, man. Wish I could do Super Chat, but hey, college graduate.
Hey, this is the next best thing. At least you were able to call in.
Yeah, I got you. I really enjoyed the show. I really love AEW. I mean, it's really great. I guess the only criticism I'll probably say is just, I mean, I'm still... Going back when I was a young baby boy, back in those Monday Night Wars when you had to flip and flop, and I do flip and flop, but unfortunately, I flip when the women show. I just don't think there's enough women. I think the women talent is kind of lacking there a little bit.
Well, I mean, right now they have this tournament with 16 women in it, so I actually think the number of women is not the issue. I think it's more trying to establish, for example, in WWE or even in NXT, take NXT, all right, since NXT is head-to-head with them every week. The NXT women's division is stacked, but it's not just that they have a lot of women. There's a lot of really quality ladies that they have on that roster, right? Now, Rhea Ripley is probably not there anymore. I don't know where she is. We haven't seen her. She was in the Royal Rumble, and then we haven't seen her since. But you had Rhea, and you had Dakota, and you had Raquel, and Toni Storm, and Io, and they're really, really good, right? You know that they can bring it in the ring. And I think AEW has, they have yet to kind of form that, I'd say that click almost of four or five women who can carry the division, who when they're out there, you know they can go out and have a great match. The first person I think of is, honestly, Thunder Rosa, who technically is not even an AEW talent, even though she's on the show. So we know Thunder Rosa can wrestle, right? We saw it tonight. Shida, obviously Shida is very good. Once you get past those two, you know, I mean, I like Britt Baker's character, but, you know, I wouldn't necessarily call her a great wrestler. I don't think she's reached her peak of greatness of what she can do. They just don't have that core. You know, the main roster in WWE, you have the horsewomen, right? Charlotte's had great matches. Sasha, Becky, Bayley, Asuka. I think that's what they're missing. You can have 30 women, but until you focus on those five or six that are going to be able to go out there and deliver quality matches every single time they're out there, it's going to feel that way. I think that's part of why it feels so lacking. So, I applaud them doing this Eliminator. I'm very interested to see what the presentation looks like with these matches that are going to be coming from Japan and how they're shot. But those are not, in a lot of cases, they're not AEW talents. Aja Kong is not an AEW talent. You know what I mean? So it's nice that they're being featured, but they need talent of their own. They need that crop of talent that can just go out there and just kill it every time they're in the ring. And that's what we're missing.
Yeah, I think probably, you know, seeing how NXT does it, you know, you get spoiled for a while, so you expect the same thing. So one more thing real quick. Sure. I'm not going to hold time because I know you got to get to some other people. I'm like you. You said this on your, I'm a fan of the show, so I hear this a lot. I'm like you. I'm a belt snob. I love belts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love championship belts. It's kind of a two-parter, but, you know, just narrow it. Would you agree that AEW's titles look way better than WWE's? And also, would you agree that in WWE, the mid-card titles look way better than the world titles, which is just unbelievably just mind-boggling to me?
I think that I wouldn't say the AEW titles look way better. They do look better. I think as somebody who misses the old school championships, which just look better. I think the AEW title looks great. It's probably, in my opinion, probably the second best world title that is out there right now in a major promotion. The IWGP is for me anyway. That's number one. I think the new Intercontinental title, it's a downgrade from the old one, but it's not terrible. The Universal title, I've only warmed to it because it looks good on Roman. The way he carries it, you know, it suits him. But yes, what is it at the end of the day? It's a giant logo. So I'm not a huge fan of the giant logo belt. It's just, you know, the fact that we have the same one on Raw and the same one on SmackDown, just different colors. One is blue to go with SmackDown. Then you have a red brand that has a black belt. It doesn't even make any sense. But yeah, the AEW titles, I like them a little bit more. But, I mean, nothing can hold a candle to, you know, Big Gold and the Eagles. I mean, even the old tag team belts, right? Those old WWF tag team belts from...
They were so awesome.
Yeah, they were great. I mean, but I get it. It's all about branding with them. Like, we just had the Bucks, right? They won the Super Bowl. So what's the first thing they do when somebody wins the World Series or they win the Super Bowl? They have a custom WWE belt made that they send to the team. And the players love it, so they wear it, they put it over their shoulder, and that way they get that WWE logo. That's all they care about. They just want the logo out there. So if you had a Winged Eagle belt, yeah, it looks great, but somebody who doesn't know, you know, what WWE is going to look at that and say, oh, I wonder where that came from. So it's all about branding. I know why they do it, but that doesn't mean that I have to like it.
So that's... Yeah, right. You know what? You got me sold. I'm a Winged Eagle fan now. Screw it. I'm Winged Eagle now.
I was Big Eagle.
I'm Winged.
It took you this long? You've been looking at it over my shoulder here on the stream for how many months now?
I see it, but I mean, I was born in the Attitude Era. I'm so used to that Big Eagle. That's why it was always my favorite. But you know what?
I got that one too.
Saw matches. Oh yeah, see, you got them all, man. I'm jealous.
Well, I don't have them all. I just have those. But yeah, nothing beats that. Come on, you can't beat that.
Those are my childhood. Those two right there.
That's right.
Well, thank you, man, for taking my call. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Always love talking belts. Always love talking about it. The big gold belt too. It's a shame they had to retire that design. It's a beautiful belt. And you know what's funny is that WWE, they just had their financial earnings, and they're making more money than they've ever made before because of all this money coming in from the TV deals and now the cock, whatever, Peacock. So they got their cock deal. But in the earnings and the merch numbers and everything, one thing that we learned, last week, I guess it was, WWE is making a killing off replica belts. That is a huge part of the merch that they're moving. So that's why you're seeing all these custom belts. They just came out with a Razor Ramon custom belt, which actually looks pretty cool. And they have a little toothpick holder on the side of one of the straps. So they have a custom Razor Ramon belt. They had a custom Eddie Guerrero, I think. Have the Undertaker Legacy belt, and there's a Macho Man belt. They had a China belt. Why do you think they're doing this? Because the belts sell. So people love their championship belts. There's a lot of belt marks out there. Belts sell. Unlike Hulk Hogan. Hogan actually was a good seller, I have to say. Hogan won. Inevitably, Hogan would always win. But Hogan actually would sell like hell for the heel until he would make the comeback. So I actually can't say that. There are some guys who are terrible sellers. I would not put Hogan on that list. 603, what do you think? Was Hulk Hogan a good seller back in the day?
I was all a monster?
Apparently my question went over his head. Yes, that's me. Who am I talking to?
Oh my God. Yo, Saul Monster, how you doing? My name is Mike. How you doing, Saul Monster? Okay. And he was a decent seller. I hired the Cena's matches. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was a great seller. I mean, he sold a lot of tickets. We know that. But no, in the ring, I thought...
Oh, yes, you're right. Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. What's going on, Mike?
Not much. Still hyped from yet another amazing, amazing episode of AEW Dynamite. Everything from the main event to Dark Order. Big fan of Dark Order. My question to you is, seeing the change in characters from like heel to kind of tweener, how do you feel about the progress that the Dark Order has made? And are you impressed with them? Do you like them?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You say progress. I mean, we'll see. It depends where it leads. They weren't really even on the show this week outside of that one backstage segment. I think it was necessary. I mean, it was just the direction they had to go in, given the circumstances. I don't think anybody wanted to boo the Dark Order right now. And I think there's potential there for someone like Silver. I mean, there's a few guys in the group, even Stu Grayson. They have some really talented guys in that group who I think will, you know, potentially break out at some point. It might happen closer to when they get more people back in the building, because I could see, like a John Silver, I could see him being a huge fan favorite.
Yes.
But
the Meat Man.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, I don't see him being a world champion or anything like that, but that doesn't mean that he can't have success as a singles or be a TNT champion. So I think that we're just going to have to take a wait-and-see approach on, you know, where they go with the whole Dark Order thing. I don't think they're done with the Dark Order and the Hangman stuff. So I don't know if Hangman does end up joining or kind of, you know, aligning with them in some way out of this whole thing with Matt Hardy. You know what may end up happening here is, you know, I know he didn't actually sign the contract tonight. He kind of swerved Matt. We'll see where that goes next week. But as this thing continues with him and Matt, if he's going to feud with Matt, or if Matt's going to take his guys like Private Party and kind of send them after Hangman, Hangman might need backup. That's what I mean. I don't think we're done. I could see Dark Order kind of coming to his aid, and they all become friends. So I think the Dark Order will, I think they'll do well as baby faces. I think it's just, you can't have them as heels right now. You just can't.
Agreed. And speaking of one last thing, because I know you got mad people calling you right now, I also agree with you that Britt Baker, DFD, will win the Super 16 tournament to face off and dethrone the current AEW Women's World Champion, Hikaru Shida. Because honestly, she's the baddest bitch on the block. Am I right or am I right?
Well, I mean, you said it. There you go. I mean, she's the one that I picked from the beginning to win the whole thing. So we'll find out, I guess, at the pay-per-view, because that, I guess that's where the title match is going to take place. So the finals, let's see here. The pay-per-view is on the 7th. So then the finals of the tournament. You know what? I have to see how the brackets are going to shape up. March 3rd is when they're doing the Shaq match. So they might want to build up that Dynamite as a big show. And that's 4 days before the pay-per-view. So the finals can be on that show. And then the title match could be on the 7th. And then we'll have our answer if she's going to be the next champion.
Oh, man. I can't wait, Solid Monster. Been,
oh, I
been
can
watching
tell.
You since 2015, 2016. I love the way you cover stuff, your opinions. More often than not, I agree with, and if not, at least you have some very, very, very interesting perspective on all things professional wrestling. I thank you so much for your time, and I apologize if I've been stumbling on my words. I've been getting right Snoop Dogg style all night, my man.
It's all good. It's all good. You were fine. I appreciate the kind words.
Oh, I love you, Saul Monster. You the man.
Thank you.
You know this.
I love you too.
Yeah.
It's a big love fest here on the stream tonight.
One, hey, big love, man.
One big orgy here on the stream. All right, man. I'm going to let you know.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Every Wednesday night, it's like one big orgy here on YouTube. Don't tell YouTube, though, because then they don't like that kind of stuff. YouTube don't like orgies. Let's see. We got more Super Chats here before I get to the final calls. Do I see my buddy A. Lavelle? Yes, I do. Hey, Lavelle, what's going on? Thank you for the $10. Thank you, Solid Monster, for all the awesome content. Helps get me through the long and tough work days. You are the best. Spanish Goddish with the $5. What matches do you see happening at Revolution? Also, you need to listen to Just the Two of Us. It's a classic 80s song. Well, Revolution. Let's see. Revolution. What do we know about Revolution so far? We know that we're going to get a women's world title match. I told you what I think it's going to be. We know the Young Bucks are going to defend the tag team titles. So that much we know. And it's probably going to be against MJF and Chris Jericho. So that's two matches we know. Darby Allin and Sting are going to have what I assume is going to be a cinematic street fight. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's going to be a regular street fight against Team Taz. So we know those three. What are we missing here? The world title, Kenny Omega? I assume he's defending against Jon Moxley. So that would be four. Archer. Then it gets a little foggy here. I'm not sure. I think those are the four that I'm pretty sure on. We'll have to wait till we get a little bit closer, though. It's probably something with Hangman and Matt Hardy. Maybe one-on-one. So that's how the card seems to be shaping up to me. So let's bounce to a different place. Man, it is packed in here. Man, oh, man. Man, oh, man, oh, man. Let's go to 989. Going once, 989. Going twice.
Oh, I'm here.
There we go.
I really like the episode. I get a real WCW feel. I mean, you got Shivani, you've got good old JR, and on top of that, you've got Sting and Jake Roberts. I mean, give me a break. I mean, WCW in the 2000s and 2001 is basically way better than the current WWE product. I don't hardly watch WWE anymore. It's more AEW.
You know, it's really sad that we've gotten to a point where I might agree with you that as awful as WCW was there in the dying days, and there were maybe a few exceptions, there were some younger guys they were trying to push, but putting that on the side, it was just god-awful television. And I actually think we've reached a point now where it would have, even if it's just in a train wreck kind of way, it would be more entertaining to watch television like that than it would be to watch Monday Night Raw.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's a fair statement. And that's fucking horrendous. I mean, that is so sad. But I think that's where we are. That's where we are. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, they sent me an email question. They go, would you be against the idea of WWE and this is not going to happen, but if they wanted to, and he was open to the idea of WWE bringing Vince Russo to oversee their creative. And my first instinct is no, absolutely not. But then I thought about it and I
absolutely
said, you know,
not.
I say absolutely not. But at this point, what the fuck do they have to lose? We've reached this point where it's like, could it possibly get any more dull on Mondays than it is right now? And then I kind of slap myself and I say, all right, don't be stupid. The answer is no. But the fact that I even thought about that I even considered it, is terrible. But I hear from people like you all the time who have just given up on the product. Now, do you watch any WWE, or have you just given up altogether on all the shows?
I've given up on WWE. I hate to say it, but Vince has lost his mind. I mean, it's just garbage now. I was wondering if Vince Russo was even writing some of the shit. But, you know, where we are today, I think AEW is definitely headed in the right direction. I like the little nod to the Wolfpack tonight. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Gives me a lot more hope. I like the fact that Impact Wrestling and AEW have this partnership going on. That's something that should have been done in the 90s with WWF and WCW, especially when DX showed up at a live Nitro in Atlanta. If they would have just opened the doors, it would have blown the roof off the place. And Vince could have profited off that too. I remember Black Saturday. I mean, it's crazy.
Has anybody ever told you that you sound a little bit like Bruce Hart?
A little bit.
Yeah, I detected that a little bit in your voice. I said, that sounds like a member of the Hart family there. You know, only one of the most famous wrestling families of all time. So that's a compliment. But yeah, no,
rest in peace to Owen and...
That's right, that's right.
Big well wishes to Brett.
Oh, Brett's the best. I mean, come on.
Best there is, best there was, best there ever will be.
Damn straight. That's a good way to end the call. Anything else before I let you go? Because that's a great way to end the call.
Yeah, I was just thinking that's a great way to end the call myself.
I agree. Awesome.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, take care. The best there is, the best there was, and the best that there ever will be. I definitely was getting Bruce Hart vibes. Because I've spoken to Bruce. I did Bruce's show a long time ago. I don't even know how many years ago. He had a podcast. He probably still does. Had a show. And he's just got that voice that you hear it, you instantly know who it is. I feel like they all sound like Stu. All of his sons. At least the ones that I've heard. As they get older, they all have that little bit of Stu in their voice. Let's go to 740.
What's up, bro?
What's going on?
How are you tonight, Saul Monster?
I'm doing well. We're winding down here with the final calls.
Yes. So, first off, I think it's great that AEW is working with Impact and New Japan. It is just an exciting time to be a wrestling fan right now. I remember many years ago when Impact and TNA worked New Japan, and some of their stars worked worked some Wrestle Kingdom events. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Well, they had also Ring of Honor title matches a few years, I think, at Wrestle Kingdom as well.
Yeah. Matter of fact, when the NWA title was a TNA, their world title for it was the TNA title, there's a match I have on a Ring of Honor DVD where at a Ring of Honor show, AJ Styles and Chris Sabin had an X Division title match and an NWA title match on a Ring of Honor show. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
I checked that out, by the way. That's a fantastic match. Hey, what would you think, Soul Monster, about a Dynamite main event of Kenny Omega versus Disco Inferno for the world title?
Well, I think the moment that Disco Inferno pops up on my TV screen, it's peace out for me. So,
I love his gimmick, though.
So you're the one. Yeah, no, I'm gonna vote no on that.
Do you think with Don Callis running Impact, and I know it's been a few years now, but do you think Impact and New Japan might work together again? What I read multiple things as to why TNA and New Japan stopped working together, that being Vince Russo, obviously. And I heard bad things about the Jeff Hardy Naito match at Wrestle Kingdom 2011 for the TNA world title.
Mm-hmm.
Something about that match went wrong, and that's apparently made the higher-ups in New Japan unhappy or something.
What went wrong in that match is Jeff Hardy. That's what went wrong. That was an awful match.
That show had a pretty sweet RVD Toru-Yano hardcore match, I thought.
Yeah, I don't remember that one, but I do remember the Jeff Hardy match you're referring to, and that did not ingratiate them, I think, to the New Japan folks. It was pretty embarrassing, actually. I think, look, we had Impact talent and New Japan talent sharing the screen tonight during the main event. Never say never, as far as there being the potential for some sort of crossover there. I don't think you're going to start seeing New Japan talent popping up on the Impact TV show, per se, but there could be some limited crossover as part of this whole AEW relationship.
Have you seen the Kurt Angle Nakamura match from Japan?
I saw it many. It's been a while. I saw it many years ago. I saw that. I saw Nakamura Brock Lesnar, but again, it's been years since I've watched those matches.
Hey, not to be off topic, but this is hilarious, and I just thought you found it humorous. What do you have to say to the guy that gets eliminated in the Battle Royal when the ref isn't looking? And instead of getting back in like a smart guy would, he goes to the ref and tells him that he's out. But he's like, oh, damn it, I'm out.
Yeah, that's a pretty dumb thing. If I were in a Battle Royal, that's not the sort of thing I would do. But anyway, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. We're gonna keep things rolling along here. And we're going to head on over to 256.
Hey, Soul Monster, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. Who are we talking to right now?
You're talking to Quincy from Huntsville, Alabama.
Good to have you on the show.
Well, I appreciate it. I've been a listener to your show. Your podcast is awesome. I want to quickly say to you, mm-hmm. and like on behalf of all of your chat that's on right now, we appreciate you. I mean, you're awesome. To Brian Zane, to the guys of World Culture, everybody. Y'all are really good what y'all do, and it keeps us entertained every week.
Thank you.
I want to appreciate that.
That's very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. far as AEW tonight is concerned, it's a great program. You know, we see tensions going on in the inner circle. Yes, Sammy Guevara is going to probably turn babyface in about the next couple of weeks. That's a spoiler. And I want to get your quick thoughts about pretty much the women tag team titles over there at WWE.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing the downfall. The only good thing that's keeping it alive is that Dusty Classic. Who should be the tag team champions? And as we get to the road to WrestleMania, do you really see Edge being going against the Tribal Chief Roman Reigns? Or we're going to be watching another rerun of quote-unquote the greatest match ever between him and Randy Orton?
Well, I'll take the first question first. I have said on the podcast that I would... Now, look, I have not seen any of NXT. I don't know what happened on NXT. I'm going to watch it tomorrow. So as far as the Dusty Classic, the men's and the women's, I don't have any of those updates right now. But I did say that I was looking for a Raquel Gonzalez-Dakota Kai win. Now, when Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler won the belts back at the Royal Rumble, that made me a little worried because I don't know that they would do heels against heels. So it could very well be Shotzi and Ember who go on to win the tournament. Either one of those teams from NXT are okay with me. I would like to see an NXT team win the women's tag team titles and then not only defend them in NXT where they have this whole, just a plethora of great talent, but actually float the way that the women's tag team champions are supposed to and have matches on all three shows. Not every week, but that's what I would like to see. Corey Graves made a great point on his podcast and I agreed with it because I've said the same thing. Part of what's killing the women's tag team division is that there really is no women's tag team division. There are no real women's teams. You might be able to pick one or two on the main roster, the Riot Squad. After that, the well runs dry. It's just a bunch of makeshift teams where they just take individual singles wrestlers and pair them off because they don't really care very much about the division. They have the belts. Everyone was crowing for years, we need women's tag team belts. And then they got them. And then they just treat the division like shit. So I think Corey Graves is 100% right on that. That is killing that division. They don't have real teams. You can form them from, you know, NXT and maybe, you know, bring them up as tag teams. But that's who I would like to see win. Either one of the NXT teams, I would like to see them get the belts when they get their shot. Dakota and Raquel to me would be my pick. But again, I understand if they want to put it on baby faces, I get it. As far as Edge and Roman Reigns or Edge and Orton, there is always the chance that Orton could win the championship between now and then. And Randy Orton could then challenge or defend, I guess, against Edge at WrestleMania. I don't want to see that. I have no interest in seeing that. I'm ready to see Edge move on to somebody not named Randy fucking Orton. Whether it's Drew McIntyre, whether it's Roman Reigns, whether it's Finn Balor, whether it's Byron Saxton, whether it's Corey Graves, whether it's Christian, I don't give a shit. Anybody else would suffice. AJ Styles, which I think we'll get that match eventually, maybe it's SummerSlam. I think it's going to be Edge and Roman. I think it should be Edge and Roman. I've already mapped it. I don't want to go through the whole thing again, but I've already mapped out why I think it should be that match. I would not take the title off Roman. You could still do the match. Edge could fall short. I like the idea that in the build-up to WrestleMania, you have the Fastlane pay-per-view. You could book Edge and Christian. Christian's not done. You could do Edge and Christian against the Usos if both Usos are healthy and back by then. Because Jimmy, I think Jimmy should be back very soon. And that could be a hell of a match. That would be a very fun match to see on the road as they're building to Edge against Roman or WrestleMania. Randy Orton could do anything else. He may well blow the thing off with The Fiend at WrestleMania. In the past, I proposed having Goldberg against Orton. If they want Goldberg on the show, Goldberg against Randy Orton could do that too. But I do not want to see Edge and Randy Orton for the chat. It's been done. It's been done to death. And if they did it, then that means Edge is winning the championship. And I don't know that I'm too hot on that idea. So Thank you, but no thank you. I think you give Roman Reigns a win at WrestleMania over a legend. Add him to the list of victims. And then you move on to the next. Oz and Glorious. AEW needs to sign Taya Valkyrie's BFF, Heather Monroe. She is better than everyone in their division besides Sheeta and Rosa. Dry Chicken, I love Maki Ito's responses to Jim Cornette's comments about AEW as usual. And should AEW establish the briefcase certificate like New Japan? No, just because, for that very reason, because it's already been done. It's been done by WWE, it's been done by New Japan, and it would just feel like a retread of an idea that somebody else came up with. So for that reason alone, I would not do that. I don't like that this whole notion that everybody has to do the same thing. Let's get away from the whole briefcase concept. I blame Steve Mongo McMichael for that. Remember the whole Halliburton thing? Actually, I should probably blame IRS. He was the one bringing briefcases to the ring before anybody else. I'm going to be back with you on Sunday for episode 691. I am working every day, putting everything together for the show on Sunday, working hard for all of you. Wouldn't have it any other way. And on Sunday, I'm going to be live on YouTube. So I'm going to be back here with you on Sunday night for the NXT TakeOver Vengeance Day review. Why Vengeance Day? Come on, it's got to be St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Valentine's Day on Sunday. It's a gimme. So I'll see you guys on Sunday night. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic night. Thank you for all the support and the super chat love. And I will be back with you again on Sunday night. So come on back and join me then. Take care, guys.